Item number six.
Thanks to the staff who were here and available to answer those any questions that did come up. On item number six, this is the executive officer's report, and we have two items where we will be giving a staff presentation. The first one is on the Moss Landing power plant. And where did Peter go?
You know, before we get
different
to
Peter.
Before we get to that, did you want to pull those out of
sequence? Oh, I'm sorry. Are there other questions?
Well, there's some other things here. And that is this is in the certification applications.
Mm-hmm.
Just a question I had. This is on page three. The PVP Investment Group Partnership. And I'm noticing here under the purpose that this project includes the removal of willow riparian vegetation for construction. And I'm curious how we are factoring that into kind of water quality.
Mm-hmm.
By allowing, here we're, also supposedly working on a riparian corridor basin plan statement, and we are approving a certification that is going to result in the removal of riparian vegetation.
Well, usually, although our table is pretty brief, and we have tried to add to the table based on board input about being difficult to tell exactly what's going on here. But typically with these projects, whether there's a bridge replacement, culvert replacement or something like that, there is a disturbance. There's a denuding of certain portions of the drainage way, and there's typically mitigation that's required as a result of that. I can't tell from this detail here what that mitigation is, but we can check on that and let you know.
Okay.
The description makes it sound like that's the purpose of the
No, I understand fully that it's just a consequence of doing the construction.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. No, I understand that. However, that consequence is what concerns me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's an opportunity that the riparian area be restored, at least, or protected.
Right. And yeah, then that's typically the requirement of the certification.
Okay.
So we can check on that.
If you could check on that, that would be helpful.
Okay.
And then on page four, I didn't understand this. This is Kelly V. Gearhart. This access road, construction of an elevated concrete driveway requiring fill in a jurisdictional wetland. So I don't know what that means.
Fill in a wetlands.
What does that do to the wetland?
Well, again, that would mean that it's taking wetlands out, and as I said, typically there's mitigation to try to compensate for that.
Wouldn't you need a core permit for that?
Yes, these are 401 certifications, so that we're not the permitting agency. Mm-hmm. We're certifying compliance with water quality.
So is there something from the Corps that would stipulate the mitigation itself?
Yes.
Uh-huh. But and a condition of our certification as well. When we send out our water quality certification letter, it says what the Corps' requirements are as far as mitigation, and that's a condition of the certification.
Okay.
But what does this mean? Is it killing the wetland?
Yeah.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Well, that unfortunately, that is allowed under 401. You can fill wetland if the Corps approves it and approves the mitigation.
And a lot of times the mitigation might be 3-1, depending on
right. Right. I mean, no net loss is what they call it, but of course that's a misnomer because it's always a net loss of natural pre-existing wetland. Even if you mitigate with 10-1, it's 10 created versus 1 existing. But anyway.
So we'll check on those. Was there another similar one, or?
No, those were the two that
okay.
popped up, and now.
Okay, I made notes of those.
Yeah. And then. Go ahead, Mr. Shalfrost.
I mean, sort of following up on this. So, is what we're doing just rubber stamping the Corps' permit, or do we have actually any discretion in this at all?
We have discretion because the certification certifies that the Corps' permit meets and the project meet the requirements of state water quality law. Oh. So, we're not enforcing the Clean Water Act. We're making sure that all state water quality standards are complied with. So if staff determines that additional mitigations are necessary to comply with state law, then they will require those in the 401 cert. 401 certs are also subject to CEQA, so CEQA mm-hmm. gives us authority to require mitigation as well.
Also, with the 401 program, just in the last, I don't know, Chris, what it's been the last 6 months or a year that Dominic Rock of our staff has switched over to be our lead person for 401 certs. You might remember Dominic from our timber workshops, and so he's dedicated pretty much full time to the 401 certs and following up and making sure that these things are actually being carried out the way they're supposed to be carried out, and that the mitigations are appropriate. So
good.
It's actually more aggressive, and I think we're more on top of it because of that. Peter, stop.
This is the noisiest place that we've ever held a hearing in.
We could close the door.
Then we can't breathe.
Did you want to add anything, Chris, to that?
Chris Adair, Water Board staff.
Yeah.
We certainly aren't rubber stamping these. I think that Dominic is doing an excellent job at going out, looking at these sites, looking at these jobs. The Gerhardt property that you brought up, Jeff, is a property where a marginal wetland was actually filled before they had a 401 or 404 cert or a 404 permit. And we went to the county. We had them remove the road. We had them redesign it. We had them mitigate it 3-1. It's definitely a better job and a better wetland now than it was. And as far as rubber stamping these, definitely not. Dominic is doing an excellent job.
Yeah. I didn't mean to imply that the staff was rubber stamping. I was just wondering if that's all we could do. That was what was my question
actually,
to Lori. It had nothing to do with what the staff's doing.
I understand.
Relax. and I know you guys are doing great. And just let me ask you one more follow-up. So if there were an issue that you were concerned with what was going on, would that ever come to the board, or do you guys just deal with it at a staff level?
We can bring it to the board. If we impose a – if we ask for a mitigation that the project proponent is unwilling to give, then we won't certify it. We'll bring it to the board.
Okay, great. That's mainly what Absolutely. I wanted to know, what the process was. Thanks.
Yes.
All right.
And if staff is asking for a mitigation that isn't acceptable to the discharger, staff at the staff level, they can deny certification, which means that the 404 permit isn't valid either. Their 404 permit can't take effect without the certification.
Okay. You might remember that we did elect to bring some to the board, and I'm thinking of the Salinas River project that was a multi-property certification. We brought that to the board, and there was another one. Might have been the Pajaro.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your explanation for Gerhardt, and that changes, you know, the information that's in here, because this description leaves one wondering what's going on. And I'd like to see the explanation then, unless you know what happened with PVP Investment Group.
I'm afraid I don't. I'll have to look it up.
If we could just get that information later.
If I could follow up a little bit, Dominic actually asked me a couple of weeks ago before this board meeting what it might be that the board would like to see in that report, because we've just recently taken the placing of that report in the agenda package away from admin, and it's basically 401 staff that's doing it now. And so rather than just switching over, maybe we could get some feedback from the board about what you would like to see in that report.
I'll tell you what I'd like to see.
Absolutely.
How are we making it better with the certification?
So some kind of a
well, when you're talking about mitigation,
staff interpretation.
Yeah, I mean, if there's mitigation going on, you're removing debris from a waterway that would otherwise stay there, or you're cleaning it up or repairing it beyond that which it is existing before the certification application. You know, I would hope we're doing that anyway as part of this integrated vision overhaul in integrating everything. But I think we've talked about this before, that, you know, with everything that we touch as an agency, we should be applying kind of a very similar eye towards,
right.
Because these are all little opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As we're passing over them, and with staff time as precious as it is, you know, Dominic's out there, he should be looking at, gee, what else can we couple with this? Kind of like what has, I think, successfully happened with some of the timber permits, where, you know, a culvert was replaced or there was some barriers that were removed. I mean,
right.
That's the kind of thing that we should be trying
right.
to
Right, yeah,
piggyback.
We're taking a look at these projects, the project proposals, especially on the larger projects. I mean, there are culverts that are being removed from ditches that do, that are permitted by the Corps and certified by us. But there are larger projects, bridge projects or whatever, that we do have mitigations for, and we'll spell them out. I think that's a great idea.
Okay.
Put the mitigations in the chart.
Good.
You bet.
Anything else from the board that we would like staff to put into the report? Doesn't look like it.
Well, if you come up with anything, let us know.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Okay. We ready to talk desal? Is that where we're at?
No, the power plant.
Power plant.
Which is on page 5.
Okay.
This is an update on the Moss Landing power plant, okay. And Dr. Peter von Langen,
yep.
of our staff is going to mention a few things,
okay.
about it.
Jerry Young,
yes.
members of the board, good evening. I'll give a quick update on the Moss Landing power plant. I'm Peter von Langen, environmental scientist at the Central Coast Water Board. In summary, staff does not recommend renewing the permit until 2007. There are several reasons why this date is more desirable than any time sooner. One is that the existing permit is in full regulatory effect. It's been put on an administrative extension since October of last year, and the existing Moss Landing permit is currently in litigation from the Voices of the Wetlands lawsuit. That is yet to be decided. Hopefully, in the early part of 2007, the Voices of the Wetland litigation will be resolved. Another reason that we recommend looking at the permit later rather than right away is that the federal 316B regulations are in litigation. These 316B regulations deal with the intake issues of once through cooling at power plants, such as entrainment and impingement. We expect that these federal 316B regulations will be resolved, hopefully, in the early part of 2007. Originally, they were supposed to be resolved in late 2006, in fall 2006, but recently there's been some decisions to push that back. Much has been said about State Lands Commission policy and Ocean Protection Council policies that these prohibit once-through cooling, but that's not the case. The resolutions from the State Lands Commission and the Ocean Protection Council do not prohibit once-through cooling. They state that once-through cooling needs to be regulated by the agencies that deal with 316B laws, and that the power plants need to be in full compliance with these laws or engaged in an agency-directed process to achieve full compliance with 316B. The Ocean Protection Council resolution states that the State Water Resources Control Board should have a statewide policy that deals with 316B and make this more stringent than the federal regulations. Another reason not to renew the Moss Landing permit right away is that that is our most current of the three power plant permits. We're limited by staff resources, and we have the Diablo Canyon power plant permit that dates from 1990 and the Morro Bay power plant that dates from 95. At this point, staff's goals are to take the existing Morro Bay power plant permit in front of the board in February of 2007, and then hopefully there'll be a synergy of the state board policy on once through cooling with the federal lawsuit being resolved at the same time, so that we'll have clear direction on how the power plants can comply with the 316 regulations at that time. I'm here to address questions from the board and the public.
I just have one correction to make. On the Voices of the Wetlands litigation, that's the litigation on our permit, I don't know if it'll be resolved in early 2007. We've been waiting for about 6 months for the court to set a date for oral argument, and I'm not sure why that hasn't happened yet, but I have no idea when it's going to be resolved. That's in the State Court of Appeal. It was fully briefed. I think we finished briefing sometime late last year.
Mr. Chair, can you refresh my memory at least as to what issues are involved with the challenge to the permit that we issued?
The board adopted the permit and it was challenged, and the court said that the 316B finding, the 316B issues weren't analyzed enough and weren't supported with substantial evidence, and remanded only that finding to the board. So the board held another hearing on the 316B issues and made additional findings and reaffirmed the same permit. And the court then denied any relief to the petitioners. So they appealed that both on procedural grounds, saying that the court should not have done that remand, that it should have just invalidated the permit, so that and found in their favor. And also on substantive grounds, they're challenging the mitigation measures and whether that was a proper consideration and whether there was an adequate showing that other alternatives were infeasible.
All right. Dr. Press.
The federal litigation, is that the second Court of Appeals? And have they heard arguments?
Yes, they heard oral argument in June, and I'm not sure why the expected date for the decision changed, although I checked the court's website a few weeks ago, and there was some post-argument briefing that was allowed. They didn't have the briefs posted on the website, on the court's website, so I don't know if there are any other briefs that are going to be filed at this point. EPA filed something.
Does there need to be, once the court issues its decision, do you think that EPA would need to adopt modified guidelines before we would know how to act on the court's decision?
It depends what the court does, and it depends how much, if any, of the regulations they invalidate. They could. There are five options now for complying with 316B. They could uphold four and invalidate one. They could strike anything to do with mitigation. I don't know. And the other issue is if the court strikes part of the rule, EPA may decide to withdraw the whole thing. But either way, we comply with what's left of the regs, or if the regs are withdrawn or don't address a particular issue, we're back to the wholly disproportionate standard.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. We just have one potential speaker, is that it?
Yes, Mr. Lee Gens with the power plant. He's an environmental scientist, said he's here if there are questions. And I don't, we have kind of a mess up here as far as paper, so maybe I'm missing some cards, but the other cards that I have marked desal, not power plant. Is that an error? Anyone else for the power plant? Okay.
Ma'am, did you want to speak to us on the power plant issue?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Good My name is Madeline Clark. I am the director of the Elkhorn SLU Coalition. I was allotted 10 minutes for comments today before you. First, I'd like to say good afternoon, Chairman Young and members of the board. The Elkhorn SLU Coalition was founded in 2001 to bring formal objections. Sure.
This is just on the power plant, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, because we are going to get into the desal. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the power plant, and I guess you didn't get my written commentary that was submitted to the board. I did put together a informational packet and submitted it in a timely manner.
Yeah.
Was that not provided to you?
And we got the whole string of correspondence between you and...
But was the 10 minutes allocated for item 6 or item 7?
Both.
For both.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Each?
Yes.
6 and 7?
Yes. Yes.
Is this taking off my time?
No.
You're going to start over?
We'll reboot here.
We'll reboot, okay.
Thank you. As I was saying, the Elkhorn SLU Coalition was formed in 2001 to bring formal objections against Duke Energy for lack of compliance and against the Regional Water Board for lack of enforcement regarding best technology available mandates within the Clean Water Act. So that gives you a little bit of history. I'm sure some of you remember me from appearing before the board before. This has been an ongoing process, and once again, we're making arguments. I would like to address Peter's couple of things that Peter said about impending litigation from Voices of the Wetlands. That should be considered moot in light of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second District decision against the federal EPA that was rendered February 3, 2004. A 3-judge panel for the Federal Appellate Court said, "We find that the EPA exceeded its authority by allowing compliance with 316B on the Clean Water Act through restoration methods." The February 3, 2004 decision agreed with EPA rules mandating closed cycle cooling as the national minimum technology for new power plants and said dry cooling is a type of such technology that would be acceptable. The court indicated that the minimum technology standard also would apply to existing power plants. Quote, "We note that Congress rejected a proposed amendment to Section 316B that would have explicitly allowed restoration measures. Accordingly, we find that the EPA exceeded its authority by allowing compliance with Section 316B through restoration methods, and we remand that aspect of the rule." Quote, "Restoration measures, which have already we have already determined, contradict the plain meaning of the Clean Water Act." Members of the state legislature, both Democrats and Republicans, supported by the governor, are enacting laws to make once-through cooling at coastal power plants illegal in California. The State Lands Commission and the California Ocean Protection Council have adopted policies to eliminate once-through cooling and encourage the use of closed-cycle cooling that will reduce impacts to the marine environments by 95%. These policies apply to Moss Landing, the Elkhorn SLU, and 20 other coastal power plants. It is the responsibility of the Regional Water Board to protect the marine resources of the public by insisting on state and federal environmental protection policy implementation and compliance. We, the people of California, have an excellent opportunity to reverse the overwhelming environmental damage done to marine environments by once-through cooling at coastal power plants. The first place to start is by denying automatic administrative extensions to power plants that utilize such antiquated and archaic technology. To do otherwise is in clear violation of the intent of the Clean Water Act, the Second District Court of Appeals findings, and the California state policy to eliminate once-through cooling once and for all. Now I'm going to touch briefly on the resolution that Peter mentioned by the California State Lands Commission regarding once-through cooling in California power plants. This was adopted April 7, 2006. California has 21 coastal power plants that use once-through cooling, the majority of which are located on bays and estuaries where sensitive fish nurseries and populations exist for many important species, including species important to the commercial and recreational fishing industry. These power plants are authorized to withdraw and discharge approximately 16.7 billion gallons of ocean, bay, and delta water daily, 1.2 billion gallons at the Moss Landing Power Plant. Once-through cooling significantly harms the environment by killing large numbers of fish and other wildlife, larvae and eggs, as they are drawn through the screens and other parts of the power plant cooling system. Once-through cooling also significantly adversely affects marine, bay, estuarine environments by raising the temperatures of the receiving waters. This is a real crux of the matter. At the Moss Landing Power Plant, most experiments showed an increase in bacterial colony counts at the discharge site relative to the bay waters 500 meters away. On average, bacterial colony counts were 200% higher at the discharge site than at the 500-meter station. Record deaths in sea otter populations in 2003 and 2004 at Moss Landing during the times when the old part of the power plant was in operation that uses 90% of the intake waters are undoubtedly the results of heated discharge water from the power plant. Pathogenic bacteria proliferate and can infect sea otters with numerous diseases that will eventually result in death. It is important to remember that the sea otter populations increased sevenfold after five of seven generators were mothballed at PG&E in 1995. Sea otters are considered an indicator species of the overall health of the ecosystem. Why are sea otters the sentinel for the overall health of the nearshore and estuarine ecosystem? Because they eat, sleep, play, groom, mate, and give birth in a very limited home range. The plume site attracts sea otters. Sea otters were regularly observed utilizing the thermal plume for grooming, resting, foraging, and interacting with other sea otters. Moss Landing Marine Lab scientists noted the reasons for the sea otter utilization of the plume site is uncertain, but may have to do with the relatively warmer water of the plume. Whatever attracts sea otters to the plume site lures them to heavy exposure of high bacteria concentrations. Nutrient-rich waters is a breeding ground for pathogenic, disease-causing bacteria. Heated discharge water provides the means for bacteria proliferation. Pathogenic bacteria affect people adversely, too. Fishermen, kayakers, surfers, researchers, and beachgoers risk exposure around the plume site and near shore where tidal flow and warmer waters exacerbate the problem. These bacteria always exist in water, but so long as the water stays cool, they don't prevent a health risk. Only when the water warms significantly, like it does at the power plant heated discharge, does a real health risk occur. A review of both the Governor's California Ocean Protection Plan and the Land Commission's resolution regarding once-through cooling demonstrates that lawmakers have responded to public outcry for protection of our marine resources. What is now state policy is becoming state law. The State Water Resources Control Board have jurisdiction over the design and operation of power plants. It is the responsibility of the board to implement policy and enforce laws eliminating the use of once-through cooling at the Moss Landing Power Plant. The Water Board is being urged by policymakers and the public to expeditiously develop and implement policies that eliminate the impacts of once through cooling on the environment from all new and existing power plants in California. The first place to start is to bring forth Duke's expired NPDES permit for review, mitigation, and renewal. Why hasn't it been brought forward? It expired last year. The argument that Duke Energy was being sold doesn't hold water because our investigation shows that they still retain 67% of ownership of their California power holdings. Duke's name was tarnished in this state after it was revealed that they curtailed operations during the energy crisis, thereby adding to the shortage that drove prices astronomically high. Now it is time to renew permits, and LS Power provides a good cover for them. Members of the public see through this subterfuge and want Duke's operations brought into compliance immediately. It is the Water Board's responsibility to see that the Clean Water Act is enforced. Duke's NPDES permit needs to be agendized as an action item without further delay. It would be appropriate for the board to direct staff to do exactly that. That, ladies and gentlemen, conclude my remarks. Thank you. Okay, any questions?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions for you. I noticed in our supplemental sheet, staff went over your comments, and you had mentioned that you thought the February 3rd, 2004 decision covered existing power plants. And you made that comment again in this presentation.
Yes, I did.
And staff has a different interpretation of that decision. I just wanted to check with Ms. Open as to the February 3rd, 2004 appellate decision regarding, I think it's current new power plants.
Right.
Ms. Clark believes it also includes existing power plants.
These are direct quotes from the court. These are the court's findings. I didn't make this up. This is not my opinion.
Ms. Okun, have you read the opinion?
Not recently, and I think there was a footnote that said something about the statute not distinguishing between existing and new power plants, but clearly what was before the court in the prior decision were the regulations for new power plants and the regulations for existing power plants is now pending before the same court.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Ms. Clark, perhaps you could take a copy of that decision and highlight those sections.
Have you seen the decision?
No, I have not. No.
And you don't have access to the decision?
Well, I do, but it would be simpler if you want to highlight the language you feel supports your statement that that decision covers existing power plants.
I don't think that's really necessary. I mean, that's a legal issue, and I have a copy of the decision, and she did submit quotes from it. So if you want to see the quotes in context, I can provide you with a complete copy of the opinion.
Was I in error? No.
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying that we have...
That's what you have staff for?
That's right.
Yes, yeah. I understand. I have a question of the board. If this permit expired a year ago, and Peter says, well, gee, we have other permits that have been expired for 15 years, and then Morro Bay's permit is 10 years past due, that certainly doesn't justify delaying the permit for the Moss Landing Power Plant. As you know, we have another issue coming up that concerns desalinization partnering with this power plant. Well, if they're going to be allowed to add brine discharge on an expired permit, how do you do that? I mean,
okay,
the purpose...
These are not expired permits.
When you say they're automatically, administratively extended, Was the public notified? Was the public allowed to weigh in? Or was this a rubber stamp from Water Board staff?
The public did have notice of that because it happens by operation of law. It may be explicit in the permit, but even if it's not, it happens by operation of law.
Well, we weren't notified, and we've been following this very closely for the last 5 years. And if you read my emails to Peter, oftentimes communications slip through the cracks. Now, the public is outraged by the fact that the ground fishery is collapsing in Monterey Bay and sea otters are dying in record numbers. If you saw my submission, you will see a number of newspaper articles that talk explicitly about the record deaths in sea otters in and around the Monterey Bay.
All right, Ms. Clark, we're going to move on to the next agenda item, which then will include the discussion of DCEL. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Anything else, Peter, for this item?
No, Chair.
That was our last speaker card.
Right.
Any board comments or questions? Okay. Let's go to number seven.
Well, before we go to number seven, we do have a card.
Okay.
For item number six, having to do with timber.
Okay. Mr. Van Lennep.
I didn't forget you.
Thank you. I had to repark. Good afternoon, Chairman Young, members of the board. Just a couple of brief comments. We received staff's mailing, staff's interpretation of the comments that we had asked for, and the board had directed them to make in terms of changes of the water. The waiver permit process. I don't think I stated my name. Sorry. David Van Lennep, registered professional forester. I only had two brief comments. We were pleased at staff's interpretation from board direction, and the only comments I had were merely for clarification at a minimum, maybe for us as a regulated industry. Beyond the positive feedback that we could provide staff, and I've spoken with Chris Adair earlier today about some of these, some clarification on the ability to shift back to the original tiering determination made by staff if winter operations are not utilized, and just some clarification that staff's intention was to allow one and one only change, and Chris seemed very positive that could not be interpreted any other way. So we'd be satisfied with that, and that was our intention also, is to allow one change and not a shifting around. And the other was that would also apply to non-industrial timber management plans where single entry units were treated as individual waivers. It wasn't clear in that language whether or not those had that same ability or not. If a larger non-industrial timber management plan was under waiver, then I could see it would probably not be appropriate. But if it was a single unit that unit had its own individual waiver, then it would seem appropriate to treat that in similar fashion. And also, the other point was that the clarifying or accepting letter that would come from the executive officer, if that was to be provided in a timely manner to actually be of use to the discharger, that would also be something that we would like. I have a number of MRP changes that have been in for about 10 months. Chris assures me that they're getting to those, but we're trying to bring all of our older waivers from closed plans from 2003 on up to current standards, so we don't have a number of different monitoring regimes and protocols and requirements for a number of these different plans. So staff assures me that they are working on those and that there's something forthcoming. So those are my comments. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Now we can go on to item number seven, unless there are other questions on the EO report.
Any other board questions? Dr. Press?
I guess I going back to the power plant for a second, if I may. I've been on this board since 2001. And I share some frustration about how we are permitting the power plants in our jurisdiction. I don't think we have a settled approach, and really we don't have a settled approach, I think, because we've been waiting for the courts to give us federal guidance. We first waited for the EPA guidelines to come out, and then we're waiting now for litigation to be resolved. I think that there is some logic in trying to write permits that take into account federal direction. The alternative is to write permits that then have to be rewritten. Even though I understand and appreciate the logic of administrative extension, I am also frustrated that we haven't got a settled approach here that we can feel is the most protective of water quality, but also will survive review. So I'm frustrated too.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Briggs.
On to item number 7.